I'm Oprah Winfrey. Welcome to Super Soul Conversations, the podcast. I believe that one of the most valuable gifts you can give yourself is time. Taking time to be more fully present. Your journey to become more inspired and connected to the deeper world around us starts right now. It was after serving in the Marines that a young Stephen Pressfield first felt his calling to be a writer. When he entered civilian life, he decided to pursue his passion, writing during the day, while working at night to pay the bills. It took him 16 years of trying before he sold his first screenplay, and while Sergeant Sweetheart never made it to the big screen, it launched Stephen's career as a professional writer. He's gone on to become the best-selling author of 13 books, including his first novel, The Legend of Bagger Vance, which ended up a movie starring Will Smith and Matt Damon. In 2002, he published The War of Art, sharing his own hard-won wisdom on how to navigate the roadblocks that keep us from fulfilling our creative potential. Over the years, it's influenced hundreds of thousands of readers who tend to discover it by word of mouth. That's how I found it. Stephen believes we all possess creative genius. He says we all are born with it in one form or another. But the obstacle that often stands in our way is an internal force he calls resistance. And interestingly, he says we feel resistance most strongly when we're about to dare greatly and grow spiritually. I was delighted to finally meet Stephen for a conversation under my pepper tree in breezy, beautiful Maui. The main reason I wanted to talk to you is because the war of art, I think really, if you apply the principles, really does exactly what the subtitle says. It will help you break through the blocks and win your inner creative battles. So thank you for writing this book, because it actually allowed me the first time I ever thought about what I'm going to ask all of you to think about today. Is the role that resistance plays in our ability to move forward?
Well, I think that resistance, as I define it, with a capital R, is that negative force that arises whenever we try to move from a lower level to a higher level, or where we're trying to identify with our nobler nature, with our higher nature. Yeah. You're trying to get out of your own little petty ego and channel the muse, or try to get something wonderful out there. Yeah. So that elicits resistance. It elicits this equal and opposite negative force.
Okay. Now, I know you're a writer and an artist, but what you say and understand is that that principle of resistance applies to everything that we're doing. And I love where you've written resistance's greatest hits. The following is a list in no particular order of those activities that most commonly elicit resistance. The launching of any entrepreneurial venture or enterprise, for profit or otherwise, also meets resistance. Any diet or health regimen, hello. Any program of spiritual advancement, any activity whose aim is tighter abdominals, any course or program designed to overcome an unwholesome habit or addiction, education of every kind, the undertaking of any enterprise or endeavor whose aim is to help others. Really? That too?
Absolutely.
Any act that entails commitment of the heart, the decision to get married, to have a child, to weather a rocky patch in a relationship. That too?
Absolutely.
How so?
Because you're trying to move from a petty, narrow, ego-based point of view to something grander, to something you're trying to get to your nobler side.
And by
to
ego,
be generous, to be kind,
to be open
to love.
To be open to love. And by ego, we talk a lot about ego on this show. By ego, you mean?
The ego is a bad rap in my lexicon.
The ego, I think Wayne Dyer had said this on an episode, the ego is literally edging God out. It's when you're putting yourself first and only thinking of yourself.
Yeah. I would agree with that, yeah.
Yeah. The taking of any principled stand in the face of adversity meets resistance.
Yes. And actually, when I first wrote the book, I wrote it, I had a different title. I called it The Writer's Life, and I thought it was only about writing.
Yeah.
But as I got more into it, I began to see this is really for all kinds of people, for artists and for everyone, mothers, you name it, anybody that's trying to move to a higher level. And The letters have proved it.
You start the book talking about what I do. Tell us what the writer's day is like.
Well, I really just sort of went into my superstitions of how I sit down in the morning. I have all these little rituals that I do. But the point of the whole thing was that at the end of the day, I ask myself only one question. I don't ask myself, did I write anything good today? I don't ask myself, did I write a lot today? Mm-hmm. I only ask myself, did I overcome resistance today? And if I did, then that's a day.
Yeah, and I love that you start that way, because you say for writers, and everybody who's ever tried to write anything, a speech, I remember not too long ago, I had to do the speech at Harvard, and I'd given myself, and I knew for a year I was going to have to do it, so I said, 3 months out, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to organize and I'm going to have in my head where I'm going. Okay, the 3 months pass, and then I go, all right, exactly 60 days I'm going to do. And then it went down to 30 days. And so when I read what you'd said, that the hardest thing is not actually writing on the page. The hardest thing is the commitment to sit down and do the writing.
Usually, at least for me, and I think for a lot of other writers, and I bet this applies to you too, Oprah, is you reach a point where the pain is worse not doing it than doing it.
Yes.
So when you start to think, I'm not going to do this today, I just can't take it, your mind goes to how lousy you're going to feel
and how
much you're
going to
hate yourself.
That's right. So you're angry with yourself all day, and the angst and the but I'd never thought of it as resistance before. Just that thing you feel, that sort of nagging sensation that you feel when you're not doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. Now, one of the things that you talk about that really is the essence of what I try to share with our viewers about being in the flow. Everybody has a flow or a zone in their life. Joseph Campbell called it following your bliss. And you say each of us need to pursue our calling with gusto and to live in that zone as often as possible. So that's what we want to figure out how to do. How do we be in that zone as often as possible?
Well, I know that you've got to get out of your little head
and
into that larger identity, whatever that is, from the ego to the self, if you want to call it that, and lose yourself, which is nothing to me more fancy than what every kid does when they're playing. If kids were just playing here on this lawn, they forget time, they forget everything, and they're just playing. They're kind of in the moment.
So present moment.
Present moment.
Yeah.
Now, what I found that works for me is just sitting down. Just sit down. I have a thing where I say, put your ass where your heart wants to be. And by that, I simply mean, if you want to paint, put your body in front of an easel. You know, if you want to write, sit in front of a keyboard, and then just plunge in. And
you want to be an entrepreneur.
If you want to be an entrepreneur, start a business, you know, whether it's a lemonade stand or whatever it is.
Start in action.
Act.
It's the Nike brand.
Just do it.
Just do it. Just do it.
Absolutely.
Now, do you believe we're all artists?
I do. It's just a question of how you define art.
Yeah.
Now, it isn't always painting or writing or filmmaking or something like that. So there are all kinds of artists, but definitely, I mean, I think that your audience, Oprah, they wouldn't be watching this show unless they felt something in here. That's why they're watching, right?
Yeah, yeah.
To hear this. And so the reason that they want to hear it is because they feel the call to something, and they also feel resistance, even if they haven't put a name to it. They know that there's something inside them that's stopping them from doing. So they're tuning in here to get psyched up or to hear some kind of
something that will be inspirational.
Right.
So this is the key. What is the thing that keeps us from putting our ass where our heart is? That's a tweetable moment. What is the thing? That is resistance.
That is resistance.
That is resistance. And why is it always so prevalent, especially when you want to do something that's really great?
It's
like take care of yourself, take care of your body, take care of other people, all the top 10 reasons.
You know, I have a rule of thumb, which is the more important an activity is to your soul's evolution,
you say that
the
on
more
page 12.
Resistance you will feel to it, the more fear you will feel. Like your speech at Harvard, you know, apparently that meant something to you because there was a high degree of resistance.
Yeah.
And resistance to
me.
Oh,
my God. And I've spoken since I was 3 years old. But it was the word Harvard.
Ah, that's what I was going to ask you. Why that?
It was the word Harvard and everything that connotes and my perception of what that was. It's Harvard.
How did you overcome your resistance to write that speech?
I finally had to just do it.
Ah.
I finally had to just do it. And I have been in the position where I didn't do it, where I've waited to the last second. And I'm like, what am I going to say? And I knew that that would just take me out, that I didn't want to be in the position that I'd been in before.
So it's kind of like what I was saying before, the pain of not doing it.
The pain of not doing it
is worse than the pain of doing it.
I said, if you don't do it, then you're a goner. Uh-huh. You're a goner. Uh-huh. So I finally
sat down. Did it come off?
Yes, it did.
Okay,
it did. Yeah, and a lot of us procrastinate.
Well, here's my theory. And again, this is the metaphysics of the whole thing. The key thing about resistance is that it comes second. And what I mean by that is what happens first is the dream.
Okay.
And resistance is the shadow. Like this tree that we're sitting under casts the shadow. So what comes first is the dream.
Is that like yin and yang? You can't have the dream without the shadow?
In my experience, you absolutely can't.
Well, that's good to
know. It's like resistance to me is like it's a force of nature.
That's a comforting That's a comforting thing to hear.
Why do you say that? Why is it comforting?
You know why it's comforting? Just hearing you say that, I got a little bit of relief. Because I don't have to blame myself so much.
Exactly. I mean,
I have to blame myself to know that that is a principle, because we all understand yin and yang, dark and light, right and wrong. So for you to say, which is a new way of looking at it, for every dream, there is automatically going to be resistance.
Exactly.
Didn't you get a little relief hearing that? Yeah.
Now that to me, actually, I mean, I spent in my own sort of evolution as a writer, I had, I don't know, maybe a 7-year period of hell from the time I first started and failed before I finally was able even to finish something, even though it was
still—
Wasn't
it 10 years before you actually sold something?
It was like almost 30 years before I actually sold a novel. It was like 20 something years before I actually made money.
Yeah.
But so in those years, I had no clue that there was such a thing as resistance. But once I recognized that there was this devil, this dragon that guards the golden, and I could see that it could be defeated, that it wasn't, this unstoppable
force. What made you call it out? What made you call out resistance and say, that's what that is? Because I'm telling you, when I read The War of Art, I went, wow, that's what that is. It shows up every time. I just didn't have a name for it.
Yeah.
And you have to
finding the name is the most important thing, I think.
Because
at least
at least now know that it has a name.
Right.
That for every dream, when you dream the dream, here comes the shadow of the thing that's trying to pull you away from the dream, and it's just your sheer will. Your determination, and first before your will is your decision to move forward.
Yes.
It's your decision. I want that. And you have to want it enough. Your will or desire has to be stronger than resistance.
Exactly. And that's why there's no magic bullet.
That's good.
I'm not selling anything, because the answer is, you just have to do it yourself. But here's an interesting thing, Oprah, that the form that resistance takes is thoughts in your head. That's the form it takes, right?
Yeah.
And the thought says, I'm not worthy of doing this.
I'm not good enough. I can't do it.
It's been done 100 times before.
What
Why am I
going to say that they haven't heard?
Right. Yes, when we hear those thoughts, the mistake we make is we think that they're our thoughts, but they're not. They're resistance. They're a force of nature. And so it's sort of like in meditation.
Wait a minute. They're not our thoughts?
They're not our thoughts. They're this force of nature, this negative force that is, whether it comes from our ego or it comes from out there, I don't know. Uh-huh. But so it's kind of like, there are many myths where St. George has to slay the dragon or somebody has to confront something. Luke Skywalker has to face Darth Vader.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they all come to the moment when the knight faces the dragon and the dragon goes poof. And the act, in other words, the dragon is self-generated. The dragon and the fear is created in our own minds.
Yeah.
So once the knight in
I realized that when I got
looks straight at it.
Looks straight at it.
And just says, okay, I'm going to sit down and write the first sentence of my speech for Harvard, right? And I would bet you, not knowing nothing about it, once you had been doing it for maybe 5 or 6 minutes, sitting down there.
You start to find a flaw.
You wrote the whole thing.
You start to find a flaw. Absolutely.
And you walked away and you said, why didn't I drive myself so crazy?
Why didn't I do this 2 months ago when I said I was going to do it?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. So the fact that it shows up, resistance, now what do we do with it?
I think you simply have to confront it head on. For me, I think that in the course of, writing a long-form piece like a novel, there always will be moments of utter panic where things fall apart, the wheels come off. And I have found that usually those are moments when you're moving to the next level. And when you're going to the next level, you're getting better, in other words. Yeah. And that's when that panic is a form of resistance, because resistance always takes the form of fear. Yeah. That's the overriding thing.
Yeah.
So I see once you recognize it and can give it a name and realize that it is not your thoughts, it's this force of nature that is trying to stop you from getting to the next level, then you can simply confront it and just do the work.
It's a force
just
of
do
nature.
Do your work.
Isn't it that little shadow voice, though, that lives inside of all of us that says, you're not good enough, and what do you think you're doing that for? Or what do you think you're going to say to the kids at Harvard? You're saying that's not my voice?
It's not your voice. It takes the form of your voice, just like it takes the form of fear. But if resistance is just like gravity, it's a force of nature that, here it is. There's nothing we can do about it.
Oh, I just love that. You said that on page 13, that resistance is universal. And if you think you're the only one that's struggling with resistance, everybody who has a body experiences it.
Yeah.
And that it is that fear. It's that fear thing. It is fear.
Yeah. Well, let me get into the metaphysics of
this. And it never sleeps. So that's what we do on this. We are the metaphysics show.
Now, in Jewish mysticism, in the Kabbalistic lexicon, there are two levels. There's the level, the material level that we live on here, mm-hmm. and then there's the higher level, the soul, the neshama. Uh-huh. And the soul, according to Jewish mysticism, is trying to communicate to us, and we are trying to communicate to it, which kind of comes to the subject of prayer, if you wanted to get into that. And according to Jewish mysticism, there is a force called the Yetzer Hara that's blocking both the messages coming from the neshama down and ours going up. And when I heard that, I thought, wow, that is exactly what I've been experiencing.
As resistance. Yeah.
It's
a separation. Because there's here we are on the earth plane, is what you're saying.
Right.
And then there's the plane above us, the mystical plane that we can't see or know, and the soul abides there and is trying to communicate down here, and we're trying to communicate up there to the higher self.
Exactly. And there is this force. Now, this is the thing that I never knew. Nobody taught me this, until I just experienced it. I thought, well, there's nothing in between the two. Why don't I just cruise right up there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then when I hit this wall and couldn't get there, I thought, well, there must be something wrong with me. I must be crazy.
Oh, I just had an aha, bing, bing. you know what allows you to transcend that layer?
Tell me.
Meditation.
Ah.
You can get there through meditation.
Ah.
So I feel that in the moment of stillness, and I have a lot of those out here, when I actually consciously make the effort to meditate, I can alleviate the resistance. I can meet the soul. I can meet the higher self. I can go to that space where God resides. I've touched that space. Have you?
I have.
Mm-hmm.
When I said to you that I thought that the voices that we hear in our head are not our voices, it's not our voice.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't meditation, I'm not a great meditator, that you sit there and you hear these thoughts come into your mind, right? Yeah. These crazy chatter.
Yeah.
And the trick of meditation,
is to understand that you are not your thoughts.
Those are not you, right? And let them go.
You are so right. So when that thing shows up and says, you can't, you shouldn't, what are you doing? It's not you.
But it's hard to do. Again, that's sort of like facing that dragon, and then the dragon goes away. As soon as you say, oh, that's not me.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at a mirror.
Michael Singer, another spiritual teacher here on Super Soul Sunday, who wrote The Untethered Soul, calls that voice in the head the roommate, your inner roommate.
That's always a good one. I've never heard that before. Yeah. I like that.
Always chitter-chattering. always chitter-chatter.
Well, it's the ego, really. I mean, it's the ego.
Okay. I love where you say the unlived life. Oh, my gosh. This is a moment. This is a tweetable moment. Most of us have two lives. No, we're tweeters here. Most of us have two lives, the life we live and the unlived life within us. Between the two stands resistance. That's what you were talking about.
Exactly.
You know, Rainn Wilson was on here, the actor Rainn Wilson was here, and he said, there really is no, he was talking about the art, acting, and was saying, there is no difference between art and prayer, which I just love that. I love
I
it as a
I would agree with that. Yeah,
there is no difference, because when you are fully in the moment of expression where you're making your offering, where your talent becomes an offering, that is a prayer. And that
it is
a prayer in the sense of an offering.
I mean, what is prayer, if you're going to define prayer?
Okay, I'm asking you.
Okay. It implicit in the concept of prayer is that we're on a level here, and there's a higher level above us.
That's right.
And prayer is our reaching toward that level.
Yeah.
What do you have out there that you
want me
to bring forth?
Yeah. Let me be I get it. I've had conversations, actually, with lots of artists who say, you want to be, and this happens to me too when I'm in the zone of acting, you want to be an open vessel and allow the spirit of whatever you want to call that, the muse, call it God, call it inspiration, to flow through you. You want to take the space of your ego, remove it so that that can flow through.
Exactly. I could have said it better myself. That's exactly the
truth. Now, what do you mean by muse? You refer to it a lot in the War of Art.
The muse to me is creativity. It's bringing forth, there was nothing, and now there's something, right? And so...
Are muses like angels?
Not really, I don't think. I mean, a muse has a real specific purpose, which is to inspire artists, to bring ideas forth. And for instance, when we do get into that moment, we realize it's not us. It's not you that's doing the acting, you know, or it's not me that's doing the writing. You know, we look at something that's on a page and we go,
wow, where did that come from?
Where did that come from, right? So that produces a certain species of humility, don't you think?
Yeah, I think
it does. Where you realize I'm a servant of a higher source. And so your role then becomes, at least this is how I look at it, I see myself as a servant of the muse. That's my job.
How do we, who don't consider ourselves, who aren't artists in the sense of producing art that we can, that's tangible, poetry or music or writing or painting, how can I apply that to my own life?
Well, I think it kind of, I believe that everybody has a calling of some kind.
Oh, God.
However odd or weird or humble. And the way that there are certain tricks you can use to find it. Most people, I think,
For sure right about that.
If we stopped and could talk to every person that is watching us right now and turn to them and said, what is it that's your calling, people would know. They'd know it. It'd be a secret in their heart. I know I should do this. You know, and another, there are ways, there are tricks that you can find out. That one thing is to say, what are you more afraid of than anything in the world? Or what would you do if you knew you were going to die in 3 months? What would be the last thing that you would do? What would you do? It's the old thing that you've heard before, you know, if fear were not a factor.
Yeah, if you
weren't afraid.
Or if
money were not a factor. So if there is a calling, that thing that you're afraid of, whatever it is, then...
What if you're watching right now?
You turn pro and do it.
What if you're watching right now? And I do a lot of speaking around the country, and I just did 7 speaking engagements, 7 cities in Canada, this past winter, and spoke specifically to that. Started every one of my gatherings, saying everybody has a calling, and the real question is to that your real job in life is to figure that out. That's the job, is to figure out. Why are you here, and get about the business of doing
And what
that.
Sort of response did you get to
well,
that?
Well, a lot of people were, so that the reason I'm bringing this up is because you said everybody, if we were to ask them right now, what is the calling, they would know. I run into people who don't know.
I mean, I was sort of fearful that that's what the answer would be. That,
I run into a lot of people who don't know.
But
you
that's
know,
unfortunate. That's
you know why?
Not reality.
They think that they don't know because they think it has to be some big thing. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So they're not keyed in.
So
you're
going to tell
us today. Let me bring
up another subject.
Okay.
When we were talking about resistance before as a form of self-sabotage, right?
Yes.
That it's a voice in our own head.
Yes.
But in the real world, we also get sabotaged by other people.
Yes.
And this is a kind of it's a really mysterious and dark phenomenon, if you ask me.
Yeah.
This question is kind of, where do we get the idea that we're not worthy? When we're little, people tell us we're not worthy.
Yes.
And when we're little and we start to show signs of going towards the light.
That's right.
People that are close to us are threatened by that because it's a terrible thing to say, but it's true. And because they want to have us, you know, they want to keep us. So
they tell
cloud
you, you're
up
not,
and rain all over you.
Or say, how are you going to be a writer? You're not going to make a living being a writer.
Exactly.
How are you going to do that?
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And so you squash that part of yourself in order to please or to appease.
You internalize that voice and then it comes back and haunts you. But even if that voice wasn't there, resistance itself would be giving you that voice. But there are... Sabotage by others is also a very real thing.
Yeah. But most of us sabotage ourselves.
Yeah, we can do enough of a job of that without any help.
And why is it that you get right to the point where it's almost going to be, you know, I've seen people do it over and over and over. I've done it myself several times, where you just literally sabotage yourself. You're almost there. You're almost there. And then you do something to blow it.
Absolutely.
And that's why it's called the war of art. Because you have to be aware of it and keep getting up earlier and earlier and get stronger and stronger to fight it, particularly the closer to the end you come to realizing your dream or manifesting your dream. You talk about the difference between being a pro and an amateur. Tell me what that means.
Well, when we're struggling with something like self-sabotage, like resistance, two of the ways that we look at it. One way is we might say, there's something wrong with us.
Yes.
We're sick.
Yeah.
Right? We have to heal ourselves. Then we can solve it. Another way is we're doing something wrong. It's kind of the moralistic thing.
Yeah.
We've committed a sin. We have to do penance. What I hate about those is they both make us judge ourselves and they put us in a place of
thinking I'm not judging myself anymore after this. This is it. I'm not judging myself. You know why? Because resistance is a force just like gravity.
It is.
So once you understand that, you have to go in there. What goes up has to come down. If you're going to have the dream, you want to accomplish something, resistance is going to show up. Be aware of that. Go in there and kick ass.
I like it. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So the third way of looking at overcoming resistance that works for me is to think that the problem is that we're thinking like amateurs.
Yes.
And an amateur doesn't know how to, when an amateur encounters adversity, an amateur folds.
Yes.
An amateur yields to distraction.
Let me just read straight from page 62. I just love the way you say it. The moment an artist turns pro is as epical as the birth of his first child. With one stroke, and this is anybody who wants to be an artist of your life, everything changes. I state absolutely that the term of my life can be divided into two parts, before turning pro and after. To be clear, when I say professional, I don't mean doctors and lawyers. Those are the professions. I mean the professional is an ideal. I love that. Beautiful sentence, must I say. Beautiful sentence. The professional is an ideal. The professional, in contrast to the amateur, consider the differences. The amateur plays for fun. The professional plays for keeps. Tell me what you mean by that.
For an amateur, their work or their calling, they do it as an avocation, rather than a vocation. So they're a weekend warrior. And I was doing that for years, you know, before, you know, I made the switch. And again, it's the same
meaning
thing of
what,
like,
you were writing part-time or trying to
encounter adversity, I would run, you know? I would blow up my life, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I made a decision, a very conscious decision, that I just wasn't going to do that anymore. Just like a decision to stop drinking or to kick a habit of some kind, an unwholesome habit.
So the professional loves it so much, you say, he dedicates his life to it. He commits full time.
Right.
That's the difference.
Right, but there are a lot of talented people out there, you know, who don't make it, right?
We're not committed, yeah.
You know, we're talking so much about resistance, the negative aspect of it, there also is the positive aspect that you were talking about before. Once you're sort of on the path,
yeah,
then all kinds of aid starts to come to you.
Yeah.
And all kinds of, you know, you do get a tailwind. Once you commit, things...
Isn't there a Goethe quote about that?
Yeah, there's a great quote about that. Whatever it is, there's magic in beginning something, and it's absolutely true.
Yes.
So it isn't only the angels or that higher dimension is calling to us. It wants us to rise to that level. You know, now it's blocked by the yetzer hara resistance, but it's a push-pull thing. And if we ally ourselves with that following wind, then, you know, we can go someplace.
What is the soul?
The soul is the self with the capital S. Uh-huh. It's that part of ourselves that is connected to God, the divine ground, whatever it is. The soul is what survives the death of the body. And so if we can live on this plane according to the dictates of that higher plane, then we've really got something.
What is your definition of God?
God is, wow, that's a good one.
Isn't that good? That's a good one.
God is something, first of all, I think we can't conceive of it. Yeah. God is too big of a concept. It's whatever was before anything was, whatever will be long after everything is gone. Mm-hmm. The supreme consciousness and force of love in the universe.
Okay. What is your experience of God?
That would come from the moments of flow when I'm working. When my ego goes away, and it's those moments where you look down and you go, who put that on the page? You know?
That's your experience.
Yeah.
I love that. Finish this sentence. The world needs...
The world needs to stop thinking in parochial terms. Mm. My tribe, my nation, my religion, my clan, whatever it is. And instead, God sees the whole world, sees everybody as one of his children. And until we can do that, you know, and I include the planet, we're in trouble.
Our greatest battle is?
To become ourselves. In the face of adversity.
Yeah. Art is?
Art is. Art is the bringing into material existence that which exists only in pure potentiality.
Love that.
And the artist is the agent of that change.
Yeah.
The gods can't create the Golden Gate Bridge. It's got to be you and me that screw the things together or whatever you do to make a bridge.
Yeah.
That's art.
My greatest joy is?
I think it's losing myself in a kind of an artistic endeavor and bringing it as a gift to other people, even if they don't appreciate it or don't even know what it is. But being able to offer something through me.
Me too.
Well, that doesn't surprise me very much.
Me too, that's exactly. Thank you, that was beautiful.
Thank you, Oprah. Thanks beautiful. Very much for having me here.
Yeah, good, and thank you for your thoughtfulness, when I could tell you're thinking about them, see? Not every day everybody asks you, what's your definition of God?
That's true.
I'm Oprah Winfrey, and you've been listening to Super Soul Conversations, the podcast. You can follow Super Soul on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me next week for another Super Soul Conversation. Thank you for listening.